Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM 360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM 360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the host or hostesses of AM 360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. Good morning. Assalamu alaikum.
Good morning.
We made it. It's October, 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 October. How are you? Alhamdulillah.
How yes, the leaves are falling and changing. Alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. And sister, we made it.
I'm in recovery, both.
You're in recovery, but you're not yet beautifully through. We have
Alhamdulillah.
Thank you. Everything is wonderful. How you doing, brother?
Alhamdulillah. Enjoying this beautiful change in the weather on this end, watching the leaves change. And reminded me of some things that Imam Muhammad told us some time ago. When the leaves change, it's a sign from Allah that even the trees put out their best colors before they return back to the earth. Start all over again.
Oh, that's beautiful.
That's beautiful.
Ooh, beautiful. Really, really.
You know
talking to office staff about autumn and fall, and a couple of them were talking about how they don't like it. And I said, let me tell you something that I like about fall. It is the season of transformation, the season of change, one of those seasons where you get to start all over again. Right? You can make it what you want. Here's what I like about it. We get to make ourselves into something new. Why wait until winter to... So I know everybody likes to go into these diets and all of that other stuff in the winter. Do it now. You can, like animals like to shed their skins and get ready for the winter. We can do it now. It's a beautiful part about the fall, right? It's a transformation season. The trees shed their leaves, so we should shed. You can shed pounds. You can shed guilt. You can shed bad habits. You can shed anything you want to. Start today, everybody. You heard it from us. You can shed whatever is holding you down and holding you back that you didn't do in the summer. You can do it right now. Start in the fall. Start today. And that is actually going to be a really good segue today into what we're going to be talking about. We've got fantastic guest coming on today that's going to build off of what we've been talking about the last few weeks about education and civic engagement and all of the things we've been talking about, building up our communities and leading us into this really hotly contested, it's going to be getting everybody's ires up political season in Dr. Dalal Sayyid, who's been working not just locally in the Illinois and Chicago region, but also statewide and nationally in building up the Muslim Civic Coalition. So this is a good time, the fall, to be talking about it as politics rolls in. But before we bring it on, you know what we're going to do. I want to know what, besides the leaves falling, makes your heart flutter, and what almost made it your gears reach for the milk of magnesia, like my grandmother used to do. Tell me what it is. What's been bothering you this week, and what's been making you smile?
Well, I'm going to let the sisters go first.
Please go. Talk to me.
We're talking about civic engagement, leadership, and accountability. What has me shaking my head is what some commentators have described as that clown show going on in the House of Representatives. And
the big top.
It makes me wonder how did these people get there? I mean, who wrote it for Gates and Taylor Green and Boebert and other members of that chaos caucus that consistently show by their speech and their actions that they're just working against the good interests and will of the people of this country. Not just the people of their districts that elected them, but of the whole country, and how their threat in their holding Kevin McCarthy hostage not only threatened our country, but impact the entire world as our economic system would go into chaos if we were to have another government shutdown. And how can they do this in the broad view of the American public after they had reached an agreement with the debt ceiling agreement to have the continuation of funding for 2 years, and here we just go a few months, and they're like, oh, no, we can't do this. Shaking my head, I just can't believe it. But I can believe it, because this this is the same group of folks that Kevin McCarthy should have realized that he shouldn't have been bargaining with, because it took him 15 rounds to even get that job as Speaker of the House. I'm still shaking my head. That's one thing. Now, what makes me happy? What makes me happy is the hope that I see in the next generation. Those young people who are becoming civically engaged, who have taken on leadership responsibilities, the youngest member of the current House of Representatives, the legislators in Tennessee, and others throughout the country who represent our future. So that gives me hope, and I think that's what we all need. And hopefully through our programming, we will inspire others to become civically engaged and active. That's me.
I love it.
That's sort of hard. Yeah, sort of hard to follow those. And one thing that sort of makes my heart smile is that finally in North Carolina, we added 500,000 additional citizens to the Medicaid program, and they've been putting that off, waiting for a budget to be passed before they made it official, even though the General Assembly approved it at least 4 months ago. But these other party leaders said they would not make it effective until they pass a budget. So by the grace of the law, we finally put together enough people to pass a budget this past week. And so we've now covered almost 600,000 additional people in North Carolina who had no insurance, but they will be able to take advantage of Medicaid. And it goes into effect December 1. And we have been pushing that envelope, oh my God, for about 5 years, actually, through a lot of the work of Dr. William Barber, who I work with pretty religiously in North Carolina. We had so many rallies down in Raleigh. We called them Moral Mondays. So we go down every Monday to present issues to the General Assembly. And one of the main thrusts of all of that was, let's provide these citizens in North Carolina with some coverage of insurance. Too many of them were dying, et cetera, with no access to health care. So that's a good thing. It finally came on the books. The sad thing, of course, you have to read the numbers very carefully. They passed the budget, but they added a lot of things in that budget that will sort of contest some things we sort of take for granted on the quality of life issues. And I'll be very specific. They expanded what they call opportunity scholarships. In other words, they take money from the public education budget and put it into vouchers to give parents about, I think it was $20 million to $30 million additional dollars to send their kids to private schools / charter schools, et cetera, and pay for their tuition at those schools under the guise of school choice. So taking one part of money out of the public funds, put into that pool of money, if you look at the bigger picture, you see that it doesn't really work, because in many cases, some of those same students return back to the public schools because their needs aren't being met in those privately held schools, because they don't have to operate under the same conditions with programs for individual needs of students, et cetera, as the public school does. Accountability is simply not there. So that was a good lift up on many levels for me, for the spirit. The downside, I went to a conference on suicide, and I really did not realize the number of suicides taking place within young female African Americans. That's the biggest uptick. And so we had about 18 different agencies there who were involved in that kind of environment, either as counselors and or providing certain support systems, et cetera. And they had pinpointed two specific zip codes in Winston-Salem, 27105, 27101, where they had the greatest number of increases in suicides among African Americans between the ages of, I think it was 11 to 17, something like that, that range. And so this was the first effort to reach out to come up with a message to address that issue in those communities and set up some kind of ongoing, consistent programming to address those issues, to make the community, first of all, aware, and then have something in the communities to address the issues. And we had one young lady, and I'll wrap it up with this. She works as a counselor for people who are committing or considering committing suicide. And we had several different students who put on short presentations, some did film presentations, et cetera, sharing their stories. But this one African-American sister, who's been a counselor for 20 years for suicide victims, she said, you know, you never know how this is going to impact your family until it comes into your door. I had one happen in my house two doors down from my bedroom. It was her daughter. And what made it so troubling, her daughter has texted a message to one of her girlfriends saying farewell to her, goodbye, et cetera. And, of course, the daughter sent it straight to her mother. So the mother comes out of her bedroom, goes down to her daughter's bedroom, talks to her, you know, about what's going on, you know, are you okay, going through all she thought was necessary, and trying to give her some room to respond without putting too much pressure on her. And she said she thought they had come to an understanding. Of course, when she woke up the next morning, the daughter had taken her life two doors down from her bedroom in her own house. So that kind of testimony really put everybody on alert on how serious this matter is and what more can we do to address this issue, especially among our young African-American females who have really been devastated. I know if it's happening here like that, it's also a national issue as well. And I looked at some state statistics, and it is a problem that we need to give some attention to. This idea of defining yourself by somebody else's image is having a very, very serious problem in our community. So that's a little disturbing. I hope we can address that going forward on more of a professional level with those who are involved in that, and just make the public aware that we should be listening both with our ears and our hearts when it comes to listening to our own children and our, you know, children in our community and those that we think might have some kind of issues with that whole matter of even thinking about taking their own lives like that. So that's disturbing your brother's heart a little bit this morning. But inshallah, we'll work together to address this because nothing happens without Allah's permission. All right. Sister Cheryl, I'm turning my 30 seconds over to you.
It's of supreme importance. I just had the same conversation with my own daughter about how necessary it is to listen, right? And especially when they're isolated, they're away from us, but more often than not, when they're right under us. So I think when they're away from us, it's easier to kind of pay the extra effort to listen than it is when they're right in front of us. And a couple of things, I love what Sister Makala said about the big circus tent that's happening in D.C. But we've got one happening right there in California. Pleased as I am with, you know, Governor Newsom naming someone to fill this seat, this Senate seat. I'm not very pleased that he's not someone in California, so we're having this huge debate right now. I want to get into that later as we speak to Sister Delara, so I don't want to spoil that right now. But I do want to say what gives me heartburn is our collective, our lack of preparation for opportunities when they come along like this. And again, we're going to speak about this with Dr. Saeed. And our reticence to prepare, and then our frustration when things are given to us that we don't like. My my glow these weeks is don't smack me, sister. The mic. Oh, okay, see, my volume is low. So my glow this week is being at an event this weekend and just watching joy on young people, young and old, and in the middle, just watching a room full of black and brown people just enjoying life and not having any hesitation whatsoever about enjoying every moment of life. It brought me so much joy. And I sat down a couple of times just watching the room, and it was just beautiful. There was nothing. It was a beautiful nikah. It was a beautiful celebration of love and life, but just watching the melding of families and the melding of communities and just watching everyone enjoy being who they were without reservation and without hesitation was joy to my heart. So, and I want to say to Sister Amatala, thank you. I know it was a lot of hard work. You're in recovery. But you should know. You should know that was very well needed by the community. And for me personally, it was, I travel so much, I move around so much, I'm working so hard. I think just taking that evening to not think about work and not think about anything, you know, hard was well needed. And so I give you my public and personal thank you. That's what brought me joy.
Alhamdulillah. I have to attribute it to Allah and to Hajj prayer and the planning and delegation of my daughter and her husband with putting together what they wanted to reflect their love and going into the future. It was impressive. The young people that came together and work to make everything a joyous occasion, as you said, for those who came to share in witnessing the nikah. And it was a product of friendships that both of them have forged throughout their life, from friends in the neighborhood to friends that they developed in college and on the job. And so it was very, 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 very joyous. And I thank Allah. I thank Allah for fulfilling our prayers to make it that.
And will you put an article in the Muslim Journal so we can all celebrate?
Yes, we should. It was
should
very well executed.
You should put it in there. I'm celebrating just listening to it.
Yeah, they put them in, what is that one, Vogue and all the other ones. We should put it in there. It was very well executed, very well.
Inshallah.
And inshallah. I want to, before we go, I don't want to do a commercial break yet. I want to do one in a moment. But I do want to bring on Sister Dalara. Because I know that we are here to speak with her, and we've got a lot to discuss today. We've got a jam-packed day. She's got a lot going on. If you remember earlier in the summer, I came in for the first national fly-in of American Muslim elected and appointed officials. Network, and it was just so much that we had to do. We're getting ready for, you know, the national convention. There's just so much, and so we've got a lot for her to talk to us about, and we've got a lot to to pick her brain about. So I do want to bring her on. We always seem to run out of time, so I didn't want to do that today. Looks like we've got a hand up, so I'm going to let you do that while I bring her on, Sister Amatla. So I'll let you touch it in. All right, let me bring her on. Dr. Sayed, welcome to the show.
Thank you, and assalamu alaikum, and may God's peace be with all of us.
Alhamdulillah, assalamu alaikum. Dr. Dalara Sayed, she is an educator, she is a mover and a shaker, she is what used to be called the Illinois Muslim Civic Coalition is now the Muslim Civic Coalition because they have moved beyond the boundaries of Chicago and North State and even Illinois into this national stage. And some of the work that has been done by the Muslim Civic Coalition and is affecting the entire nation. We've picked up on it in some of the work we're doing in California and trying to duplicate it. And this work is so impressive. I mean, one of the things that I have been most impressed with that I didn't say that brings me joy, one of the things that brings me joy is that Illinois became 2 years ago the bill passed, but just this last week at the beginning of the month, September, 2 weeks ago, it was announced that Illinois became the first state in the country to finally have enacted or make effected, I should say, because the bill was signed 2 years ago into law. But 2 weeks ago, for those of you listening, Illinois became the first state in the union to have effected no bail. No bail for those accused of a crime, because we keep saying those jailed, but accused of a crime, and to really have a system by which you can be released while you are awaiting your trial on a system of either on your own recognizance or on a monitoring system. And a lot of that is stemming from the work of Muslim Civic Coalition and several other organizations that know that, including, you know, NAACP, ACLU, CARE, and a lot of organizations that know that this unequally impacts our community. But there's several other things that states you have helped bring into law that I wanted you to talk about today before we get into civic engagement. You want to tell me just these are really, really exciting that I'm so, so anxious to get to bring to, you know, the West Coast and some of the other states. You want to tell us some of the higher impact bills and laws that you guys have helped bring into fruition, Dr. Zayed? First, tell us a little bit about yourself that I have not told them already. I know you don't like talking about yourself, but I need you to today.
Of course. Thank you, Cheryl, and thank you all for having me. And this is a conversation because we're in this together, right? And so you are sitting in California and seeing this work. Some of us are in D.C. I'm a Chicago kid. I'm in the heartland of the nation in the Midwest. And I was a kid like many others were, trying to figure out who I was as a young person. When our family first immigrated, and our family has been in the U.S. since the 1950s, we joined a vibrant community of African Americans that were already here, and their legacy has been here for hundreds of years before we came. But we joined that legacy, and I felt like, you know, we were in a neighborhood of black and brown kids, and I was like, I learned how to double Dutch before I even knew you could single rope Dutch. So later when somebody would pull out a single rope, I would say, where's the other one? Because you, like, had to double Dutch. And I think I grew into that space. Unfortunately, as in the 1970s, we had the epidemic of crack cocaine, which so deeply impacted Black and brown communities. And so our neighbor who was on crack cocaine robbed us. And, you know, as memories are, like, some of our family members remember a gun, some of us don't, but, like, it was my sister, my father, my mother, myself. I was 6 years old. And that put deep fear into my parents, who were already trying to figure out where they were and how to navigate as immigrants. And they moved us to a neighborhood that was not diverse, that was not Black and brown, was actually all white. And for the next 7 years, I was bullied. I was weekly beaten up. Chicago's a tough city, and we were a part of it. And I remember at one point my mom would say, why are you fighting? Like, why do you fight at school? Why do you come home so, like, messed up? And I say, you know, you took me away from a neighborhood where I felt safe because you felt unsafe. And you brought me to this neighborhood and you keep telling me we're safe, but I'm not safe. And like, who am I? And I'm a, you know, 10-year-old girl responding to my mother like this. And I'm wondering how many others had that sense, whether it was at school and whether it was at home, whether it was in the neighborhood, whether it was at when we started our work, where do I belong as an American? Where do I belong as a Muslim? Where do I belong as, you know, whether I'm South Asian or Latino or Black? So this idea of being part of American story and where we fit in. And that's really how this all kind of started. I ended up, oh, Cheryl, do you know what often bullied children end up becoming as grown-ups? What profession they choose?
Attorney.
Police. Makes a lot of sense. And actually, police anecdotally also makes a lot of sense and truth, which is kind of dangerous, right? Like, so then you grow up and you're angry and you actually have a gun in your hand. Teachers is another one. So I became a teacher. Yeah. Because remember the years you felt the safest at school and the years you felt the unsafest at school had a lot to do with your teacher, whether it's emotional safety or intellectual safety. You could take a chance and raise your hand, get an answer wrong, and you still would be, like, respected and loved, or you raise your hand and you'd be, like, ridiculed or whatever. So I became an eighth grade U.S. history and government teacher to do both things. One was to, like, yeah.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Sister Masala, did you know that? You were educated at some point. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
Did not know that.
I spent almost 40 years in education. I did not know that.
It makes sense.
Well, because, right, like, we want our students to feel safe, right, in every way, physically, emotionally, intellectually. And then I taught U.S. history and government because I wanted to learn those subjects. And I always wonder this, how many teachers pick the subject they want to learn in to be the one they teach in? Because the more you learn, the better you get, and then the more you can teach about it. And I love U.S. history. I just ate it up in any possible way, you know, reading books, watching films and documentaries, and then whatever I could, bringing into the classroom firsthand documents and artifacts, et cetera. And what I found, as much as I love this story, I wasn't in it. Cheryl, you weren't in it. And we weren't in it. And when and if we were in a tiny sliver in it, it was in a very stereotypical way. Yes. And so that's what I wanted to change. And that's how we changed the civic justice work, is how do we change this story? So one, all of us are in it. And it's a truer story of the American experience from 500 years ago to today. And how do we build an America, each a part of it? And that's civic justice. That's civil rights. That's human dignity and rights. And that's what the Muslim civic justice does is, yes, we are rooted in Illinois. I don't know if you knew this either, but Illinois is the largest per capita Muslim population in the nation. you're more likely to meet a Muslim at the grocery store, at a health center, or as an Uber driver in Illinois than anywhere else in the nation. But the work we're doing is something we can test out in Illinois and share with the rest of the country. And it is truly about making American Muslims part of the American story.
That's the part. I remember seeing the big sign and the big map that had all of the statistics on it. And that was the mind-blowing part about being able to see, you know, how many Muslims actually live in Illinois, because it's not one of the most populous states.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Illinois, California, Virginia, New York. I mean, if you think of the top 10 to 15 states that have Muslims, if we work for justice for all people in those states, we would absolutely change this nation to the dream that we all want it to be for us.
And imagine if we, and then I'm going to take a quick break, but imagine if Muslims gained their fair share of, or declared our, mm-hmm. where we are most populous, declared mm-hmm. our fair, our proportional share of civic responsibility and political voice in those same states. I want everybody to think about that for a minute. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say yes, and in some places we are, but we're not being recognized as doing it.
Right.
And in other places, we could do more. So I want to honor those who are doing the work. You know, I'm not we never do anything. We never go and we never make a difference.
No.
That's not true. In some places, we're making great change. We just aren't always being recognized for it as well.
Exactly. I agree with you. And in some places where we don't have very many Muslims, like even, mm-hmm. or we're not, we don't have as many Muslims. Like in Georgia, we are doing things in Georgia, which is amazing. It's not that we have a lot of Muslims, but they're concentrated in certain areas in Georgia. But mm-hmm. the fact that Georgia is not in that top group, we are still claiming, you know, state offices in much higher numbers than in California, or, you know, especially more than California. And so we're recognizing that. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll come right back. Let's take a quick station break. Hold on. Don't guys move. And if you have a question or a comment, you can dial in on our line at 515-605-9891. And press number 1 to enter the queue for questions or comments. Give us one moment. Don't touch the line. We'll be right back. Thank you very much.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you. The one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
Family, community, city, state, country, and more. Everything starts with you. The individual, you. What is the character of you? Are you a book? Can you be read? Join us every Friday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for a wonderful hour of information being shared by you, with you, for you, the you in all of us. I am Martha Nyla Abdullah, and I am your host for Community Developmental Stages. Again, every Friday evening from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m., be there.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
All right, all right, all right. We are back on the air with Dr. Dalara Sayed with the Muslim Civic Coalition. You are on with Map 5. This is Cheryl Fettis. Sister Ahmadullah Sabri and Brother Fleming Elamin. Okay, so there were a couple of really high-profile projects that the coalition was able to get turned into laws here in Illinois. I should tell you, I actually came into town last night. I'm here in Chicago.
Oh, you are. Why aren't you staying with me?
Yeah, I know. I need to come and see you. I know I'm here for a conference downtown. So I've got to see you before I leave. And I know it's just so happy it fell into place that I'd be here this week. I wanted you to talk about them, especially, you know, the dealing with the Modesty Act for the athletes and the halal food for those imprisoned persons and in the schools and elderly centers. And so I wanted to, and then access to Quran in prison, and then also Muhammad Ali, Dr. King. So can you talk about those, especially those particular ones? Can you talk about those and then the effort he took to get that done?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll try to do it hand in hand with, because getting it done and the effort were like really just both a part of it, right? The what we do and the how we do it is so integrated. And you all believe this, you know, Sister Amatullah, Brother Fleming, you know, Cheryl, like we all are working on this together because we've built many, many, many masjids across our nation. We have hundreds of masjids and we are working on filling them. We have, you know, dozens of Muslim schools and we are working on improving them. And we have social service organizations. We have refugee assistance. We have food insecurity and homeless shelters. But what we don't have enough about is even after we're doing all this great work, we're not at the table when policies are made. We're not at power structures that actually identify the things that get financing and funding and those that don't. And I think that's our next level up as an American Muslim community. And so when you talk about laws, right, laws are made for us. So they all should be made with us. We should be helping leading that work. And that's what we think is that next level for us. What's another one? Public officials. America has over 500,000 elected officials. 500,000, Cheryl, elected officials. And less than 500, 0.001%, less than that, identify as Muslim. So
can you say that again?
Yeah.
Say that number again.
Yeah. half a million elected officials at the local, the state, county, federal levels, and less than 500 are ones that we have identified in a database that are Muslim. So
we want public officials
to understand us.
Hold on. So every time I get on this show, and let me get on this show, and you hear us talking about why it's important to run for office or whatever, that number right there, 500 out of 500,000, that made the hair on the back of your neck stand up. We should not be talking about when you see a Muslim person running for office and you want to make them sell their firstborn and explain to you their DNA versus their RNA. You should just give it up. I'm going to let you finish, but these right here is enough to make me just going to rant. So go ahead. I'll just take that number.
Absolutely. I'm with you. I'm so like hopeful when it makes you angry to see that, right? When it makes us motivated to see that and want to change it. And I'm not saying we're going to be, suddenly from 0.001% to 10%. That's an increase of 1,000%. That's not going to happen. But what I am saying is public officials should either understand us or more should look like us, right? And actually, it's an and. Public officials should understand us and more should look like us. And it has to be both. Has to be both, because we're never going to be enough so that everybody who has a Muslim constituent is going to be Muslim. But they have to understand us, and then from our own community, more have to run and win for office. And you know what drives a lot of this? Like, until I gave you this number, you didn't know. So data, that's the third thing we do. Data has to drive us towards justice, right? Towards equity. Like, when you know it's 500 out of 500,000, you know that's an injustice and we have to work at it. When you know, it took us till 2018 to have somebody in Congress in 2016 to have somebody in Congress, we know we can change that. When you know the top 10 states of America actually have, pretty much 90% of the Muslim population, then we know these are the states to focus on to change things through the Muslim community. So data has to drive us. So these are the three things we work at. Laws are made for us, and they must be made with us. Number two, public officials must understand us, and more must look like us. And number three, data has to drive us towards justice. And this is on our website. So as I'm sharing the bills, et cetera, I want you to go to MuslimCivicCoalition.org, MuslimCivicCoalition.org. We're a civic organization. We're not a religious organization, but we're driven by our faith. And so every bill we think about, okay, so you talk about, okay, how do we make these laws? Every bill we think about turning into a law is never a Muslim bill alone. It is a bill that is good for everyone. So I'll give the example of the inclusive athletic attire bill that Cheryl referenced earlier. This bill, and now it's a law in three states, started in Illinois, and that's how we're impacting the nation. If we test something out in Illinois and it is a bipartisan law that passes, we can then go to other states and pass it. So this bill has now passed in Illinois, in Maryland, and in Utah, and it is going to be passing in about half a dozen more states next year. So that's the power of testing it out in one state and then sending it out. This bill says if you have, for health reasons, for modesty reasons, or for faith reasons, a uniform that you want to wear that is different than the public school athletic uniform, you can wear that uniform, and you do not have to constantly get an approval. You don't have to go and constantly be having, you know, files you have to fill out and documents you have to fill out of why you have to do it. And so who helped us support this bill? So when we listened and so many parents told us this is important to them, we went and we asked our allies, does this matter to you? And Cheryl, evangelical moms said, this matters to me. I want my daughter to have a more modest dress when they're swimming, not a bikini.
Exactly.
Jewish parents said, we want our sons to be able to wear a yarmulke as long as it's in safe conditions on the court or on the field. We had parents of children who had psoriasis or eczema on their arms saying, I want my son or my daughter to be able to wear a long sleeve or long pants or leggings when they play sports so that their eczema isn't, you know, exposed. So this was, again, a coalition we built around races, faiths, backgrounds that all wanted this bill. And then when we passed this bill, it was not a Democratic bill. It was a Republican bill. It was a human dignity bill. It was a sports bill. And it passed unanimously. I mean, actually not unanimously. A few people obviously still go and disagree with it, down party lines. But it had huge support from both Republicans and Democrats, and it passed in Illinois. And like I said, later it passed in Maryland, and then it passed in Utah. And people are like, Utah? How'd you pass this bill in Utah? And it's actually two reasons. One, Utah Muslim Civic League is one of our partners, and they do great work in Utah. And two, imagine Utah's Mormon community, who is as modest as we are as Muslims. And so they wanted this too. And so that's an example of how we identify bills. We look at all communities who want them. We build it collectively. We make sure the bill is good for all people, not just for Muslim people or not just for one community. And then the coalitions help do community organizing. We have people call. We had legislators say, my gosh, your community is always submitting witness slips. We almost gamified it. When we have a bill and it's passing, we say, click on this link and press where it says, I support this bill. Put your name and address down and submit it. It takes less than a minute to submit an online witness slip saying you support this bill. And then when people submitted it, we identified the hundreds of people who submitted the bills, and we showed everyone who filled it out. And we had people going, oh, my gosh, my name's on there. I'm an official witness for this bill. And people wanted to be witnesses, and they wanted to support a bill into law that was right for all of us. And you can, you know, that's community organizing. We had people who were calling and texting their friends to go fill out a witness slip. We had people who came down with us in Springfield, Illinois, to help pass this bill. And all of this is community organizing. So the bill is identified with a diverse coalition. The bill is drafted and supported by our team, and then the bill is passed through community organizing. And those are the steps that we use.
So tell me you don't love this. Tell me, guys, tell me you don't love this model. I mean, this is, we've all been community organizers, so we know how this works. I mean, I love this model. I'm like stomping for that bill. I told my daughter about this because she, like I was, gymnast, and that was one of her major complaints when she was older, like I was, 15, 16, hitting puberty. And then once, you know, and as a, you know, as a Muslim, and modesty tends to kick in, especially when you hit puberty, and it's like, why do I have to wear this leotard? The boys don't have to wear it. That was like one of the first things came out of her mouth. And then when I saw what was happening in Illinois, where the bill was just getting, it wasn't passed yet, but it was working its way through the system, I was like, this is what we need in California. This is what we need. And I was telling her about it. She was getting ready to come out of high school by then, and she was like, why can't we have this? So when I told her when the bill got signed, she was ecstatic about it, but she was thinking, this is what we need in California. And so I'm, like, pushing for this in California because she was thinking this would be so much different if we could have this, you know, in California. You know, now they do have, you still have to sign for it, you still have to write letters for swimming, but gymnastics or dance or skaters, they don't have those exemptions yet, and I love this. I love this. Mr. Mafila or Brother Fleming, I wanted your reaction, but this is what we do. This is what we did when we were all organizers.
Yeah. And Cheryl, I love that you highlighted that your daughter loved this, because if we are actually saying that the bills we're supporting highlight and honor our young people, then they know we take them seriously. Then they know we are advocates for them and with them, and that they are important. We could have started with any number of bills, but we started with a bill that directly impacts young people. And that was very important to us. Obviously, I'm an educator. Our policy director, Maddie Muzaffar at the time, is a mother. So obviously this matters to us, but it matters to everyone when you first advocacy is done for the young people. It matters. We make them important. We center them in our communities. The second bill, another bill that passed, is a criminal justice reform bill. But, you know, there's lots of criminal justice reform bills that are coming out there, and I'm so glad you highlighted no cash bail, right? Like, completely important to have no cash bail, because it was, you know, the people who could not afford to make cash bail were the ones who were being asked to, you know, pawn their life items and to mortgage their homes to be able to do this if they had homes or if they were renting, right? And it was either a choice between do I pay my rent, do I pay my groceries, or do I pay bail because, you know, I've been, even before trial, incarcerated. But we took another, we supported all of those bills in criminal justice reform, and then we asked those who were incarcerated what kind of bill isn't being created that they wanted us to create. And you know what they said? We want a bill that allows anybody we want in terms of an imam or a AME pastor or a priest to be able to come to the prison. And we asked the question, actually, that a lot of elected officials asked us, wait, but doesn't that already happen? Like, why is that a big deal? Isn't that common sense? Like, everyone should be able to have, like, services in prison. And the answer is, Cheryl, no. It is not common practice. It is up to the guards and the supervisor on duty to decide if an imam comes to the prison, whether he's allowed in or not. If an AME, African-American Methodist Episcopalian church pastor, comes to the prison, whether he's allowed in or not, whether a Latino priest is allowed in or not, because it could just be they say, oh, well, you already have a pastor coming. Just work with that pastor. And we said, nope, we want a law that says a prisoner, given that there is someone available nearby, can choose and ask for any kind of a faith leader. And why was that important? Like, because of Friday Jummas? Sure. Because of Sunday Mass? Sure. But more importantly, who do you talk to when your family's in strife and they're outside and you're inside the prison? Who do you talk to about your mental stress and depression when you're in prison and incarcerated? You talk to your pastors and your imams, and if they can't come into the prison, you are left alone. And so we made this a faith and mental health issue, not a religious issue, but a faith and mental health issue as well. And guess what? Again, this bill passed with bipartisan support. We had Republican legislators who were saying, wait, isn't this common sense? And we said, yes, sir, it is common sense, but it is not common practice. So will you make it law so that it can become common practice. And they did. And now we have it. And we're the first state to have that.
Right.
And so criminal justice from many angles, right? Our brothers and sisters incarcerated in prison, and you know this, African-American, Latino, and Arab brothers and sisters are incarcerated in prison at a higher rate than their population should be.
And that access is like, and a lot of people take it for granted that it's happening. And we found out that access to a Torah or a Quran is just not there. Maybe you'll get a Bible. Even that is no guarantee. You might get a Bible, but you're not guaranteed access to your religious text.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like really important for those of you listening who are thinking that this is an automatic thing. It does not happen automatically.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a really important law.
And if you're a community organizer and you want any of these bills to come to your state, that's the other reason, Cheryl. I love your help and your team, you know, Brother you and the team putting this together, because here's our chance to share with each other, right? Like if we learn something in one state, everything we're doing is open source. If you like any of the bills we have passed, we've passed 7 bills in 3 years led by the Muslim community in Illinois, and then we've passed those bills in other states now. If you want to pass it in your state, if you want to ask questions, yesterday I spent about an hour on the phone talking to a different community that wanted to pass a couple of the bills, answering their questions. Use our language from our bill. Ask us what the process was. We have a template that we've built. And we'll tell you which was the hardest bills to pass, which were the easiest bills to pass. If you're in a Republican state, which bill you should start with. If you're in a Democratic state, which bill you should kind of like push the needle on. And we'll learn together what happens in your state, so now we can help a third state and a fourth state. So, again, our email is, my email is Dilara@MuslimCivicCoalition.org, and our website is www.MuslimCivicCoalition.org. We have about 150 partners across the nation. About 60% of them do not identify as Muslim-led. They are Black, Brown, Tan, Jewish, Christian, Hindu, Buddhist, and they are all still striving for justice as we are. And about 70%, 60 to 70% are those who are Muslim-led and those across the nation that are Muslim-led. And so, you know, you can't do this work alone. You can't do this work with just Muslims. You have to do this work as a coalition.
That's really important. I like that, you know, learn lessons from each other and then take it to help the next group. This is phenomenal. Tell us about the
mistakes. Yeah, we'll tell you all the mistakes
we
made, too. Like if some – oh, sorry. I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
No. I like this. Learn from the mistakes and the successes.
Yeah.
This is important. Tell us about the food justice. Yeah.
Yes. So the food justice bill is another unique bill. It says that prisons, hospitals, and school districts, all public spaces, should serve halal, kosher, vegetarian, and you know, a faith food. We think nutritional equity, and that's the focus of this bill, is now nutritional equity. And nutritional equity is important. People who can't eat something because of dietary restrictions, we support it. But you know this, and we know this, faith restrictions are sometimes as important as dietary restrictions. For those people who only want to eat halal or only want to eat kosher or only want to eat vegetarian because of their faith, if they don't have access to it, they won't eat protein. And that could be very harmful if you're in prison for a while or if you are in a hospital where you have to get better. That bill passed the House and the legislature, but the governor vetoed it. So sometimes when we don't pass a bill, we're also learning a lot. And we had people in our community call us and say, oh, what did you do wrong with the bill? Why didn't it pass? And what we responded back is, we followed the process of the bill. It passed the House and it passed the Senate. It was a political decision for the governor not to sign it. And what we have to understand as advocates is, now get to work. If there was a political reason why the governor didn't sign it, make it so politically important to the Muslim community and the Jewish community and the Hindu community and our allies that he must sign it. So that we now are pressuring him. We now are telling him, you know what, for whatever reason you vetoed it, it's not as important as the reason that you should pass it. Because we care and we're not going to give up. So that's all. It's our opportunity to show the governor and our legislators, you know, they don't always take the Muslim community seriously. They just don't. I had a senator tell me, who else are the Muslims going to vote for if they don't vote for Democrats? And I said, be very careful, Senator. Sometimes the Muslims may not have somebody else in another party. Sometimes they may stay home. And what you don't want to do is the number of Muslims who stay home in some of our districts would change the outcome of the election, and they would, a Republican or somebody else might win if that's not what you want. Your opponent may win if we don't come out to vote. So please do not tell us that we don't have a choice. We have a choice, and we want to support those who support us. And we want to support those who understand us. And, you know, and he got it, right? Like, but the Democrats, often people will say they don't take us seriously. And the Republicans, people will say that they actually don't even want us in their party. The answer is we're not Democrat or Republican. We are American Muslims with values that are deeply American and justice-focused. And that's what we should vote on, nonpartisan values. But many times, obviously, you know, we are working with the Democratic communities because that's where there's opportunity and there's some hope.
Oh, I love it.
I don't know. What are your thoughts on party and the system?
Well, I have a love-hate relationship with one of the parties in particular, but I do think, and I have a very hate-hate relationship with one of the parties. That's pretty odd. But I do love that you underscored that we should be proceeding with our values, because I think that that's like very, very important. You know, whether it's personal or with the elected official job that I do, I always like to proceed without abandoning my ethical duties on being integrity led. It's something that I refuse to diminish my either my personal integrity or any moral basis, period, no matter what. I would rather give up a position than to relinquish that for me personally. And I think that it's important that as we're talking about civic engagement and we're talking about leadership, that those are the qualities we look for, whether it's a Muslim or anybody else. And this, the other part of the conversation that we're going to have in the second hour, is how do we make sure that we are getting enough of us into office, into leadership positions, local commissions and boards, and you know, local and state and federal government and appointments. But we're also making sure that we're holding ourselves, our community, and these leaders accountable in a way that they're not doing what the governor did, right? You get them up there, and they're not doing what we're looking for. I'm going to have you ask that same question. So Sister Amatala and Brother Fleming, what do you guys think? Because I think this is a really important question. What do we think? Because I think I'm going to say this, and then I want you guys to answer the question. One of the things we're faced with in California, Sister Amatala knows this with me, is when Senator Feinstein passed away, bless her soul, is, people were expecting it because of her health and her age, and Governor Newsom was expected to make his appointment. There was this air of he needs to replace her with, a quote-unquote black woman. But the black group were saying, replace her with a black woman. And what some of us were upset about was, what's the criteria? So he names the black woman. I told you guys earlier I was going to speak on this. So he had one particular woman he was going to name. It came to us on Friday, and it was going to be the previous Service General, Dr. Nadine Burke. And then there was uproar. People were upset. They were like, well, how are you going to name her? She quit as Surgeon General. She said it was too difficult. She was wanting to spend more time with her family. I'm not saying anything that nobody else says, so I don't really care if people listen to the recording, they listen. But she quit on us as Surgeon General. She said, I need to resign. I need to take care of my family. You know, being California State Surgeon General is a lot of stress. And so I need to deal with my family. Okay, no problem. I can respect that. Put family first. But why would you consider someone who needed to do that to go to the U.S. Senate, which is, like, even more stressful? And she doesn't have a political background, right? So he must have heard all of the silent screams that were going on, because he made this really hard pivot, and he just did it yesterday. This was not in his plan. He went down an entire list of women who were elected. Well, what he didn't know is, in the background, a lot of us got on a phone call on Friday. Anybody who was elected, appointed, or had any chance of getting a phone call saying, if he calls you, you say no. You say no. Because he was supposed to, Barbara Lee was on that list. It was Barbara Lee and Karen Bass who were on that list when he selected Padilla, right? And so his refusal to appoint Barbara Lee, because he doesn't want to interfere with her and Katie Porter and Adam Schiff's race, is a slap in the face. So now he's going outside the polls, and he came up with LaFonza Butler yesterday. That was most people think he's been thinking about this a long time. No, he did not. This was a hard pivot yesterday. And bless her, I know her. I met her when she was first. She was on the Board of Regents with UC, and then when she was appointed to Emily's list, I spent time with her when I was in a couple of events in D.C. with Vice President Harris. The last time I was with her was in May and then July at Howard University. Wonderful person, very intelligent. She knows Democratic politics, of course. You know, she's at Emily's list, which works to put Democratic women, pro-choice Democratic women into office. And it checks all of these boxes, you know. She's a pro-choice lesbian black woman. He checks his boxes because he's really concerned about himself getting ready to run for president. This is what he's concerned about. Everything he does is about himself. But it doesn't check off the boxes we need. So I said, this is our fault. Everybody's mad at him. What are you mad at him for? This is our fault. Did we give him a list of criteria for who this black woman is? Or did you just say, appoint a black woman? Did you say what that meant? Did you say what criteria they need to have? How many years of experience? What kind of experience they needed? Where they needed to come from? What background? Did you do any of that? It's like when Obama was in office and everyone was upset. Well, he's doing all of this stuff for the Jewish people, but he didn't do anything for black people. And Obama came back and said, what did you ask for? You did all this stuff for the gay people, but you didn't do anything for us. And Obama came back and said, what did you ask for? You did all this stuff for these Muslim people, but you didn't do anything for the black people. And Obama came back and said, Why did you ask for it? You did all these things for the Asian people, but you didn't do anything for the black people. And Obama came back and said, what did you ask for? So I say to you, Muslims, what are we asking for? When have we, and this was the love, that's why I love the fly-in we had in Chicago in late July, early August, mm-hmm. where we sat down and we said, we have to come together to say, what are we asking for? So this, I gave you guys mm-hmm. a whole little background feel, because a lot of times we sit here and say, it was something you said, I just took a note, Dr. Delata, and it was laws are made for us, but they don't include us, and they must include us, and we need more legislators that need to look like us, but that have our core values, because, you know, everybody mm-hmm. looks like us, all kinfolk and kinfolk. So I don't just want a Muslim. If you're going to get in there, you're going to vote like everybody else, and you don't keep our values with you, right? So what are we looking for? Are we looking for somebody who just says they're Muslim, and then as soon as they get in, they're doing something else? They don't carry the integrity or the accountability or anything else, right? And I'm not saying everybody has to be cookie-cutter, because I'm not going to think the same way is somebody who's either 20 years older or, you know, maybe even 20 years younger. And maybe there's some creativity that we have to use, as you say, so we can work in coalition. But what are we looking for? Do we have a national mm-hmm. agenda that may be different from in the Midwest and the East and the South and the West, but some starting point?
Mm-hmm.
That's the conversation mm-hmm. I want to have now.
Yeah. And every meeting that we have, critical. Do we also have an ask, right? Every meeting, small or big, there must be an ask. So what are we asking for collectively as a group, but what are we also just asking for at every single meeting? You never walk away without saying, we support you, ma'am or sir, and here's what we're asking for you to support for us.
And that's that organizer background. This is because we are all organizers, and we know how to not walk away with saying, thank you so much for meeting with me today. This is what I need from you.
Mm-hmm.
And this would disappoint me when people go into a meeting. Okay, you left the governor's office, and he shook your hand and smiled. You took a picture. But, okay, and? Yeah. I don't want a picture with you. I want you to guarantee me that you have 13 appointments you need to make. How many of those are coming to us?
Yes.
You remember what we talked about the Democratic National Convention. You remember we were there.
Yes.
For those of you, I'm going to say for the benefit of the audience, Dr. Delata, they came to us and they asked us for something for return. Okay, that's great. You come into our community, you want something. We want some prime time slots for some Muslim speakers. All of them are going to look different. And no, you're not going to put us at 4 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon. We want to be right there before the vice president speaks on the stage on national TV.
Mm-hmm.
Can you make that happen? Because if you can't make that mm-hmm. happen, then why are we even talking to you? Why are we talking to you? You put everybody else on prime time when they host it. We want to be on prime time so that they know what Muslims look like. And we don't want, we don't want them all looking cookie cutter because we're not monolithic. We want the whole gamut, and we want to be right there when what's his name? You got Brian Williams, you got the brother, Oliver. What's my name? Lester Holt. I want to be on TV right before Lester Holt comes up. That's how you ask for something. Let him say no.
Yes.
I'm not going to say no to myself. So, go ahead, Brother Penny. What you got?
Yes, let me first just thank the presentation, and Dr. has been very specific. In terms of strategy, you know, we worked as the American Coalition for Good Government on nonpartisan issues for a number of years, and you have to always have an ask based on the agenda you bring to the table. What is your value system and your agenda that you have specific asks for? I do want to add one other element, though. Being at the table is very critical, but we also need to consider being a part of policy institutes because elections change, personalities change, et cetera. And I give you a very specific example here in North Carolina. We wrote a letter of congratulations, of course, to our newly elected governor. With that letter, he, of course, responded, asked what he could do to assist the American Coalition for Good Government. Our response was we need halal food available in all the penal institutions across North Carolina. So he immediately responded by sending his outreach coordinator to me and assured me that indeed they would have access to halal food during the Eid celebrations, et cetera. So that's one example. The other one is based on just relationship building on a consistent basis. As you expand your coalition, maintain relationships based on your issues. It's very critical to maintain those because they will fluctuate also. We have some elections coming up now.
Mm-hmm.
Heads will change, parties will change, but our issues sort of remain the same. We have to hold people accountable for enforcing those, or at least responding to our issues on a consistent basis. And finally, when you're building your partnerships across the country, are you basing that on chapter membership, or how do you qualify who can become a partner in your organizational structure? And I'll mm-hmm. end with there was a group in California called the American Muslim Alliance that I was a part of when I was in graduate school in Arizona years ago. Dr. Saeed was the national president. I think he's returned back to the law. But he had an idea that we thought we should massage a little bit more to include faith, of various faiths, because this folks was just on the Muslim community. So I think we should follow your lead. You've done an outstanding job. You have a recipe already is working and cooking in the oven, so why should we go about changing that? And I just applaud you. It reminded me when I was teaching school, I would have on one of my boards, knowledge is my friend, ignorance is my enemy, and I'd have a picture of the world there. On the other board, I always have separated his story, her story, where's your story, just to get the thing a little bit. But we have to really keep that focus on board. And I won't say, I've exhausted my 30 seconds, but thank you so much for your presentation. There's much we can learn from that. And, you know, whatever I can do to assist in that effort, please feel free, because ACGG is all about building coalitions.
Thank you. I think you really, you know, these are the questions we have to ask that are not, the vision is there. We may even have strategy, but until our tactics are clear and until our work is clear, then we're just still all talk, right? So one of the questions you asked is, you know, policy making and appointments, and you know, these are important as well. And the answer is a resounding yes. Nothing that we do in this space should be an either or. Even though our resources might be tight, we have to find a way to be in these spaces and all of these spaces, at least to some degree, because we don't learn until we try. And so, yes, we have to be strategic, which candidates can win, who has strategy. Yes, we should be strategic about where we put our money, but we do have to try. So policymaking is one space. Appointments on boards and commissions is another space. Community organizing entities is another space. Candidates and winning and governing is another space. We have to try for all of them because we're playing the long game. Each failure means we learn and then we step forward. Each success means we now have a pipeline we can build behind us. I want to use Keith Ellison as an example. He started out at the local municipal area space. Then he moved to state. When he moved to state, who took the local space? Somebody else who's American Muslim. We didn't just give it away to someone else, right? Then he went to Congress. Who took his state space? Ilhan Omar, somebody who is Muslim. Then he came back from Congress and took Attorney General. Who took his congressional space? Ilhan Omar. Who took her state rep space? Another Muslim. So we now have built in Minnesota this incredible pipeline where people are supporting each other, and when they win, they build a pipeline for the next Muslim and the next Muslim. That's how the Latino community does it. That's how the Black community does it. That's how, like, when you get a level of government that you win, you don't ever lose it. You keep it, and you grow our community into it. What makes it so challenging to do all this, though, when I say, yes, be in policy, sure, be in, you know, appointments and boards. Yeah, of course, you should run for office. Who in our community is raising their children to say, son, I want you to grow up and work in civil rights and justice. But who's telling our daughter, no, don't go to med school. You should go and work on policy. Like, that's not happening in our community. So the tactic has to be, parents literally have to say to their children, you need to do the work that serves our community and puts bread on the table. And the community will continue to keep trying to do better at it. And people who care about this have to be courageous enough to say to their families, I know you want me to be a lawyer. I'm going to be a lawyer, but I'm going to be a civic justice lawyer. I know you want me to be a doctor. I'm going to be somebody who works in policy for healthcare, and that's what I want to do for medicine and healthcare. So one is that question is we have to be in all of these spaces, but more importantly, we have to nurture the talent. Right now, we don't have the talent we need to run organizations that are civic justice, civil rights, and human rights organizations because we're not raising children to do this work. The second question you ask is, okay, we're doing this work now in our organizations. Are we a chapter or a member or a franchise? And I do believe member organizations, are there, and I believe that franchise organizations are there. But in today's world, we have so much open source information, and we have so many organizations that are just starting. But I think what we need to do is not worry about if somebody is your member or your chapter, but to keep information open source, especially in the civic and political world. I'm going to ask you, too, what's some of the characteristics of someone who does civic and political work? They're very independent. They're very autonomous. They build their network. They don't want to kiss the ring of others and or like be in a membership forum. And so we want to say that's okay. You don't have to be under an umbrella. There's no need to be in an umbrella or under that umbrella, but we should be working and learning together. And so our focus is on, you could go on our website right now, and I'll repeat it one more time, MuslimCivicCoalition.org, and you could literally build your blueprint for a civic organization in your state, county, or city. And we want you to, but we want you to be careful and strategic. We want you to be sustainable. Like, don't start it and then in a year quit. Don't start it and then in a year, like, not have funding to do anything with it and you burn out as a volunteer. Be systematic, and that's what we will help you do. Reach out to us. Let's set up appointments and meeting times regularly once a quarter where we're like helping you. And sure, the money will come because grantors and community members want to see that we're working together. And the money will come because we're systematically talking to grantors and saying, there's a dozen organizations working with us on this one project, 150 partners and allies we have across the nation. If you don't invest in us, who are you waiting for? And so, chapter or membership, we don't have a chaptership. We don't have a membership program, but what we have is an open source, and what we have is a mentorship program. We do not want you to start and fail. We will mentor you so that you succeed. My gosh, we are so, I don't want to say so far behind, but we are not where we need to be civically and politically in terms of our power. So I don't have time for scarcity mindset. I don't have time for people who whine about, oh my gosh, but they're going to steal something for us or they're going to take our hard work. Go ahead. If you don't have to work hard and you can take some things from us, maybe what you can spend time doing is building new things and then we can learn from you. The risk comes from a loss. One of you said this earlier when we were talking about suicide, which broke our hearts, and we make dua for all our young middle-aged and seniors that are struggling with depression and suicidal thoughts. But one of the things you said is, Khair, everything comes from Allah. There is a reason for it, and maybe we can learn from this. And I say the same thing. There is no scarcity mindset. Have an abundance mindset. Whatever you have, give to others, and it will come back.
Yes.
I love that.
Yes, it's so important. I work with a group now called the Creative Corridors Coalition, and we basically designed some new bridges throughout the county of Forsyth, which was never done before with the DOT department because it was community-based, community-engaged, and we had a design structure we wanted to have included in these new bridges. Now, that has become the federal DOT's guidepost for how communities should work together when it comes to designing bridges. And so we picked up a new project a couple of weeks ago called the Peter Oliver Gallery, which requires about an $8 million investment. But we have people on that board, again, from various different groups. We came in for one specific objective. Let's build this thing to honor Peter Oliver, who incidentally was an enslaved person with the Moravian Church. He was so smart enough, he designed his strategy to buy his own freedom and did so. And one of his descendants is Chris Paul, the basketball player. But just another example of how coalition building gets your maximum benefit. Mm. And don't let numbers scare you. I've been around a little while, so I work with $1 billion to $1, so numbers never did impress me that much in terms of fear factors. Just go after your goal and ask Allah for guidance, and I'll stop right there. That's more than 30 seconds. Thank you again. Mm-hmm. I have to keep my watch on with Sister Cheryl. You know, she keeps me on the 30-second time frame now.
Yeah, because you got a different kind of watch over there. His Rolex is missing the L.
I think I've gone over on my answers.
Nah, you're good. Brother over there got a different clock.
Sister, Laurie, to view for us those steps that you first talked about in the process you used in getting a bill passed. I think that would be good for our audience. And then I would also like Sister Cheryl, we have 347-751 in the queue to maybe get a comment or a question from that caller.
Okay.
But
okay.
Before we do that, I would like Delaria to Delaria. If you would go over again, you started, I think, with the witness list.
Sure. And I think I shared the process. So there are four big steps. The first step is to listen to community members and partners and allies and identify the bill. The second step is once you've identified a potential bill or a law, find a legislator, and it can be anyone. Like, there are legislators looking to further good bills. And, like, at this point, we have legislators who come to us and say, what bill are you thinking of passing? Because they see we work organized. They see that we're working tight and that we're getting bills passed. So then they want to be sponsors. Because bills cannot be introduced into the legislature by you or me. They have to be introduced into the legislature by a legislator, one of them. And so step two is finding the legislator who will be the chief sponsor. So we're the chief sponsoring organization, but you need a chief sponsoring legislator. Once you do that, you write up the bill, you draft it into legalese, et cetera. And then the third step is passing the bill. And the passing the bill, the legislator does some of the work, his team does some of the work, we do the community organizing, and we make sure our communities do things like fill out online witness slips, call each other to make sure other people are filling out the witness slips, call the legislators. Like, so we have a QR code, put your phone up here, and you will know who your legislator is, and we will give you their phone number and email and everything. Here's a script, call them, and we have people who do that. for the faith behind Faith by Plate for the Halal Food Bill. We also had testimonials, because what we wanted to share with the legislators is, why is halal important to our community? Because they really don't even know what it is, really. Or why is kosher important? Because they don't understand what kosher and halal is. And so we had them write testimonials. We had over 100 testimonials where people told stories about their family. For example, I'll give you mine. You know, my mom is in just turning 80, and she said to me the other day, you know, like, if anything happens to me, don't let me be in the hospital for a long time. Don't let me stay in the hospital. And I was like, of course, mommy, we want to take you at home. And why not? She goes, well, I try so hard to pray 5 times a day, and I try so hard to only eat halal and zabiha. And if you put me in the hospital, they're not going to have zabiha for me. And then they're going to feed me food that is not what my religion and what my God wants me to eat. And I was like, wow, she's worried about going into hospital not to get taken care of. She's worried they're going to actually, like, disrupt her needing her regular halal and zabiha food, that they're actually corrupt her digestion.
Right.
And I was like, and you don't realize this. And so I'm not the one in the hospital, but she is, and she needs it, and I'm fighting for her. And so each of us has that story.
Wow.
Tell that testimonial, right? The elder who's afraid to die in a hospital because they'll be dying eating non-halal food. The incarcerated individual who knows what he did was wrong, or she did may have been wrong, and they were repentant of it, but now every day they're even more repentant that they're eating food that is not zabiha and halal. And so again and again, the kids at school who, that's the, you know, if maybe the food they're eating during the day, because they're at school 7 hours with the activities, and then they either have to bring their food from home or eat whatever's at school, and it may not be to the religious interaction. So the testimonials, the witness slips, the calls to the legislators, this is what communities need to have. And that's step three. And then you pass the bill, but there's one more step, and that's step four, and that's education. A bill is no good unless we know it exists. So you can say, hey, you know what? We passed this bill. You can wear whatever you want as a sports athlete. But if there's a student in Mattoon, Illinois, from a Muslim family, and they don't know this bill has been passed, they're struggling just like they did before the bill was passed. And if there's a bill and a incarcerated individual doesn't know that he can ask for his imam, and that's his right now, he's still going to be in prison and not have that right fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
And so we educate our community to make sure they know the bills that have been passed that directly impact them. And then we educate our legislators, our educators at schools, our prison supervisors, to make sure they know that this is a bill and they have to follow this right. They have to allow this right. And those are the four steps. If you go on MuslimCivicCoalition.org and click on the top right-hand corner, and it says advocacy and policy strategy. The four steps are laid out so that you know what our strategy is and how we execute it. And we
are
happy to help anybody across the nation do this strategy with any of our bills that are listed on the webpage that we passed in their city, state, or nation. Remember, it doesn't always have to pass as a state. We could pass this bill in a county or in a city ordinance.
That was important.
Thank you.
That part, that last important to say, yeah. Okay, so you want to take some calls now, Sister Amelta?
Yes, we have 347-751. They've been waiting for a while.
Okay. Yeah, you want to go ahead and take them? Locally.
Yes.
Want me to read?
Just drop it by when you want. Okay. Take a look through it. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Do you mind if I take it home with me?
No, not at all. All right, that's fine. Yes. Thank you. Thank you, Sister Cheryl. And,
yes, ma'am.
You're a wonderful, wonderful guest today. Do I have the name right, Dr. Saeed?
Yes. Delora, please.
Delora. Okay, this is Mahasin. And Imam Fleeman, greetings to you also. It's this is such a wonderful world, and I know you're wondering, why'd she get on just to say that? I just finished a consultation with a new Shahada, who it's clear in our discussion that Allah is motivating him time to activate his purpose. You know, as human beings, I love the comments that you've been making, Dr. Saeed. You're in very intuitive contact with human development and how you frame the experiences you've shared with us in this program today to really make it clear that this is something that's, this is an evolution that's accessible to anyone, whomsoever will, let him come. And the situation of faith orientation is something that's between the individual and their Lord. Okay? But I'm one who has practiced community organizing. I was trained in that same organization that certified President Obama. That's the same organization, Genesis, out of Illinois, that I was trained and did in California about 10, 12 years of community organizing. So I'm very, very in sync with what you're saying is a process, your assessment and description of the process, and I pray Allah that our listeners are as energized as I am. You make me want to go back and start over. Call myself in retirement. Mm-hmm. Nope. It's not retirement. Allah just alters your pathway so you can benefit other people like he benefited mm-hmm. you. So my question is, we have a lot of concern, and Sister Cheryl understands that I've always been connected with development of youth. So this, what I'm hearing you say, is really accessible, is being made accessible and applicable to even those who think they are underage or maybe they don't mm-hmm. have a background, et cetera. And so I'm just eager to find out what procedures do you recommend we put in place to pull that generational audience into the activism that is inherent in their being. Many of them don't know that. But the things mm-hmm. that you're talking about, the political process, the forward progression, the fact that we were created with the content of being an influencer in our daily lives, how would you recommend to us that we advance or jumpstart that process so we can reach and attend to the needs that are so vital today? Stop right there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And are you staying focused on young people and energizing them?
Actually, I was just now, he just left. I'll say it like this, you understand it. Allah, I'm a teacher in a senior facility. What they call, the administration here called it Quranic study class. Now, I'm the only Muslim in this facility, but because I interact sociably with people, I don't make any difference, right? Because we're looking at their nature, mm-hmm. their definition of their nature. So when I relate to them, they appreciate it and they want to know more. So I'm doing it, but I keep getting the young employees coming to me and addressing me, and they're like of the college, like the gentleman here, he's been a non-activated Muslim for the last 2 years, Trey, and he just was employed here, and because he's part of our housekeeping staff, I get these mm-hmm. services complimentary. So when he came to my door and he saw me dressed as a Muslim, I guess he observed me interacting as a Muslim. He knocked on my door and said, I would like to talk. You have some questions. And so, you know, informal kind of trajectory that if we recognize it, we can attend to it. So I'm a member of the Grandparents Around the World. It's a 5-chapter organization, global organization here in Harlem and the Bronx. And they have a beautiful intergenerational program. That's why I'm asking you if I can talk specifics, because we'd like to formulate this year an more active initiative to really get our generations involved and make this legacy, give them this legacy while we are living, to carry on. So I'll stop right here. Sorry.
I think it's so powerful what you said. You talked about the youth, but then you also focused on the elders. And to me, you know, I was driving the other day and I saw this beautiful center. You know, it looked so welcoming from the outside. You know, the windows are nice and clean, and you could see there was a cafe part, and there seemed like a sitting place. It's a shared workspace or something like that. And as I got closer, what I saw was it said, I can't remember the name of it, but it said underneath it, daycare and elder care. And so what they had done is they recognized the two places where our communities really needed support were both in the very young and in the elderly. And I think in civic work, I'd like to tap into that for the 2024 election. We have elders who want to do things like phone banking for us and who want to do canvassing, like walk. Like it's a good exercise for them and they want to walk. What they need to do it is, one, they need a younger person sitting with them to help them understand how to do phone banking online, because there's such cool ways now to do phone banking online on your laptop or on your phone. And if someone would just sit with them for 15 minutes, they would learn it, and then that person could go off and help someone else. Or even for 5 minutes, they would learn it, that person could go off and help someone else, and then now you've got an elder who's using hours of their time excited about talking to people on the phone, which many elders, they love that because it eases and soothes their loneliness. It gives them a purpose. They're on the phone, so they're not trying to necessarily brave a winter cold or the outdoors. And so what we're trying to do for 2024 is take the youngsters in our community and partner them with some of the elder organizations and community members, having campaigns like, we want to do phone banking, but we want it to be grandma and grandson, grandma and granddaughter phone banking, mommy and me phone banking, mother-daughter phone banking, like trying to bridge these generations where the younger generation will find ways to engage the older generation and upskill them in some of these spaces, like using technology. And the elder generation shows the younger generation some of the ways that we talk, which is, you know, the elders talk very, you know, kindly to others. They have like a way of being soothing. They have a way of being very polite and respectful, because that's how the generations were raised. And I think then the youngsters learn that. So I think phone banking, canvassing, you know, I actually canvassed last year with two elders. I was just the driver. I wasn't even canvassing. So I would have the list in front of me. I would drive. I would pull up in front of each home down a block and say to them, this is Mr. and Mrs., you know, El Katab, and this is your script for them. And the elders would walk up to the door, and they would go, and then they would come back in the car, and I would drive them to the next house. So there are ways to engage elders. There are ways to engage our community. And that's why I said very clearly the fourth part of our steps is education. We never, ever leave without making sure our community is educated and inspired. Elders want to be on a bus and go down to Springfield with us and spend 2-3 hours in Springfield and then get on the bus with their lunch and head back. So those are the ways, and I'm sure you know them as community organizers. We just have to do them more. I don't know if that helps. We know what energizes our community. Let's be honest, we just don't do them.
That's excellent. Excellent, excellent. Looks like we have another hand too. Sister, we have 7426.
Yes. 7426.
He has an ego.
Please get a question.
Yes, I'll make them.
Okay.
Can you hear me? Okay,
yeah.
Yes. Please
put your comment question. We have limited time left.
Yeah, I know. I've been on since you've been on. I just want to say that over the many, many areas that you covered, the suicide, this and that in the beginning of the show, this is the Islamic, number one Islamic voice in America, and when a person is attracted to turn on the program to hear, you know. Also, I would like to say that Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's response to when he was told to give the sun in one hand and the moon in the other to be a part of the established world at that time and community that he lived in and their way of doing things, and that certain kickback or feedback will be given to him. And he said he would refuse it. He said, I don't care what you give me. I have to establish this model community that will help, paraphrasing, you as well as help all of humanity. And I wouldn't give it up. Also, we know that we are taught in the number one voice, Islamic voice in America, that those who run or campaign for a position that's contrary of what a law invites you, even though it sounds good, and it might be right to the people who are not want to dedicate themselves to serving the needs of all of humanity, but their own, you know, you don't support that person. You know, then we have a model. We have shared space. And that shared space has been told by Allah himself that you come out of this area. I have you in this hell for a reason. To show the believers how to come out and do for self, establish a halal situation. Now we are on the point where you gave an example. My wife had a stroke a couple of years ago. And she went to 3 schools right here in Atlanta, Georgia. I made sure from the jump street that she had no male doctors, attendants, nurses, or anyone of the male that going to serve her. Of course, they were shocked. They wasn't used to that. They're used to Muslims coming in there and just going along with the procedure. But they abided and went along with it. And my wife was in the hospital for almost 9 months. They even gave her a Muslim doctor. He was male, but he also, very good brother, in our community. See him at Juma now, although he is in another state. But he also reinforced what I was telling him. He said, even though I'm a Muslim, I'm still not going to have my presence in her room. I'll get a female to even help me. There was another Muslim doctor there from Africa. He also said the same thing. He worked behind the screen and had his nurse service my wife and all of her needs because they had a model to go by. They had a man in this hospital who was showing them, though they were not used to, that this is what his wife, a woman of religious character, regardless of what they believe in, should get, the respect that they should get from their criteria of a belief.
So yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Suicide.
We have like one minute. We got one more.
Yeah, you said, okay. Yes, ma'am. So we have to always remember that first we got to support the station that you're on. This is the number one Islamic voice in America and around the world. But
yes.
I have listened here for two hours, and most of that has been to how to reinforce the American society, Christian society, society of multiple problems beyond your imagination. And we're talking about going skillfully into the web and the veins of this society and thinking that we're going to make a change and not spending no time establishing the change outside of what they're looking for. They're trying to get outside of what we're trying to get inside of. They're looking for help, but they're the same human being who is our soul. Just want to say
that.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank you for your comments, but you have to also look at this. One direction that Imam Muhammad told us was that we are owners of this country because our ancestors have paid the price. And as long as you don't see yourself as an owner and you're just a renter, you are, this is my words as far as being rented, you become subject to the rule of what that they own. So I don't think that there's anything that said in this program that goes that of Imam Muhammad as far as actively participating in the political system to make our lives better. And also, we're talking about establishing model communities. This is all a part of model community. You're not going to be able to set up a model community if you don't know how government works, the workings of government, the good and the bad, so that you know what to avoid. We thank you for your comment, but we also we have to be broad-minded in what we're thinking and in our application of the guidance from the Quran and from the model example of our Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. I think Brother Fleming has his hand.
Just going to recommend to the brothers the book on Islam and American Democracy by Imam Muhammad. I repeat, on Islam and American Democracy by Imam Muhammad. I think you've been enlightened by reading that book, inshallah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir.
Also, that at every I appreciate the brother's comment, and he's right. And we have been centering the conversation on it's not about being a Democrat, it's not about being a Republican, it's about being the middle community that our Prophet espoused and told us to be. It is about our values and our faith that drive this work. It's about bills and laws that are good for everyone in a society and make everyone feel valued and give dignity in the society. So all of this is Islam. All of this is our faith. And this is what drives us. If it was just to get in on the inside, you know what? We'd try, and then if we couldn't get in, we'd give up. But we don't give up because this isn't about Islam. This isn't about America, Democrats or Republicans or whatever. This is about Islam. This is about our faith and justice.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I love that. We're going to have you back because we're going to be in a really heated political season. And so everybody stay tuned. We have a lot more work to do. I love this conversation. And if anybody knows I'm Politico, I think this is something that we all need to be paying attention to. Thank you so much, Dr. Saeed. I appreciate you and all the work that's going on, and we will stay tuned. Part 345 coming up. For everyone else. Yes, thank
you
her.
All.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Alhamdulillah.
We will be back next week with more Map 5. We have another episode coming on next week with Brother Fleming.
with another exciting episode on civic engagement, how we get our community back on track for informing, educating, and engaging. Remember, change the way you look at things, and what you see will change. Stay powerful. Stay politically inside, and have a wonderful day. Have a wonderful week. Assalamu alaikum. Thank you so much.
Okay. Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you. We're out of here.